Yes, sir. Hello, listener. Welcome to episode 5 of Area De Rigori. That is ADR, your weekly dose of all things culture, all things Serie A for BTL, breakingthelines.com. I'm your host, Danish Iqbal, joined by the ever regular Maxi Angelo.
Hello.
Hello, sir. How are you doing, Max?
I just got off of work, so now I'm great.
What, you hate your job?
No, I'm just tired.
Right, yeah. But you're on the Champions League shift, were you?
Yep. Yeah, it was really fun. I covered Liverpool, Club Brugge, and Atletico.
Did you, just out of curiosity, did you watch it on like one big screen and there was four other games? Like there's four games on this at the same time, or?
No, we have many screens. So I have like two small monitors and then we have bigger screens as well. So we're loaded with screens.
Ah, multi-screen. Lovely.
Yes.
We do have a special guest this week, don't we, Max?
Yes, we do.
Casey Affleck. No, I'm joking. No, it's not Casey Affleck. Casey Evans has joined us. Thank you very much for doing this, my man.
No problem. I'm glad to be on. And thank you for adding some enthusiasm to my presence.
Of course. Your presence is always enthusiastic.
Yes.
Is it not?
I
love the pause. I love the pause.
We'll go with that.
Casey, you are interacting with you on Twitter and stuff as well. You are a Serie A head yourself.
Yes, I am. I quite enjoy a bit of Serie A. I've watched it. With my entry into Serie A was obviously you had the Italian football show very early on when I was younger. So I'd watched AC Milan and stuff like that. But my main way into Serie A is very weird. Is the 7-0 thrashing of Roma, or 7-1 thrashing of Roma. I can't remember exactly.
Come on.
By United. And I kind of watched them. And then everyone was like, Roma's really good. This is a really good result. And I was like, yeah, I kind of half watched them, but I'll watch a bit more. And obviously,
yeah, right.
My favorite player is Francesco Totti. So
yeah, those were the fun days. Actually, it's funny you should mention Francesco Totti. Max, did you see the news this week?
Yeah, I just saw it before we jumped on.
Our hearts and minds go out to Francesco. Did you saw what happened, right, Casey?
I think I retweeted the post.
God damn, man. Totti, of all people. Like, how does this... I wonder if his... It's still his wife, right? But they're not, like, divorced or anything now.
Yeah. I think he's okay. He's talking back on some stuff because I think that happened over, like, lockdown, a lot of this. And obviously, speaking of...
Yeah. There was... Basically, Italy legend Francesco Totti claims his wife's infidelity caused their marriage to break down. And then he spoke out on that. What I want to know is, like, is this woman still in Rome? Because
can she be?
No, right? That's what I'm. The first thing I would have done if I saw that, I would have got a flight ticket off to, I don't know, Naples or Torino, Novara or Tuscany or anything, anywhere.
Yeah. No, I think he meant that it. Kind of were a lot of things happening that accumulated up to him ultimately hitting a depression almost.
Yeah, sad.
Yeah, sad, he also really. Lost his dad to COVID.
Yeah, went through a tough period, the god of Rome. But anyway, this is not a podcast about Francesco Totti's personal life. This is a podcast about Serie A. So let's get into the scores for the last week. Napoli 1, Spezia 0. Inter 1, Torino 0. Sampdoria 1, AC Milan 2. AC Milan winning away. Atalanta 1, Cremonese 1. These were on the Sunday fixtures. Sassuolo 1, Udinese 3, Bologna 2, Fiorentina 1, Lecce 1, Monza 1, Lazio 2, Verona 0. And then Juventus 2 and Salernitana 2. Mental game. We will get into that first, I think. And then to finish us off on Monday was Jose Mourinho's Roma winning away at Empoli 2-1. let's get in straight away to Juventus 2, Salernitana 2, and this was some of the most remarkable 10 minutes I've seen in a football game. Serie A went all the way off. There's the capacity, this league has the capacity to produce a game like that where just the barmy goes on and the foolishness goes on and just kamikaze mayhem goes on and you can't really keep a lid on it.
We kind of needed it because it's been a few weeks now with a lot of new draws.
We've been saying, and a very good Twitter account, Dia Balexa, who's a Juve fan herself, said that it feels like the teams are being a little more defensive this year. So last year there was tons of goals conceded, but it does feel like this year the team sort of shut up shop a little bit.
Juventus are bad. So it's like, I was watching that game and I was like, it's glad the last 10 minutes happened because the first...
No, but that's what Max Allegri gets you, really. But it does feel like, I think, a lot of the middle teams or the fodder are sort of just prioritizing defense this year. But anyway, I mean, getting into this game, so Juve go 2-0 down. Bremer pulls one back on the 51st minute, and then it looks like Juve can come roaring back because they start to come back, obviously. It goes up until the 93rd minute. Bonucci steps up in a Sergio Ramos-esque manner, takes a penalty off Vlahovic, or Allegri lets Bonucci take the penalty. He misses the penalty, scores from the rebound, and then Adrius Milik scores in the 96th minute from a corner, takes his shirt off, gets a second yellow. The ref sends him off. Ref then gets sent to VAR, disallows the goal, which then just basically unleashes a royal rumble between the two benches. Max Allegri gets sent off in the ensuing chaos. Cuadrado gets sent off. Fabrizio Fazio, did I pronounce that right? I think Fabrizio Fazio gets sent off for Salernitana. And this was all within the space of like 10 minutes right towards the end. This was a game that we needed, man, like you said, Max.
Yeah, it's been a lot of... draws, especially in nil-nil draws. So this was...
I mean, it's still a draw.
Yeah, it wasn't a draw, but...
Score draw.
This is the kind of draw we can accept.
I mean, unless you don't watch this league every week, it's very hard to explain what goes on. The officiating is that bad that something like this can happen. Let's get into the goal, first of all. Juve should have had 3 points from this game. We can criticize Max Allegri and his style of football and what Juve are trying to do this year all we want. The fact is they should have 3 points. I don't know how VAR doesn't see the Candrava is standing right near the corner flag.
There were reports in Italy that the VAR referees actually didn't have that footage. So...
I don't know how, but
the report about it today that they didn't have that footage.
So I think there's what kind of happens is, I think someone explained it, I can't remember, I think it was on Julian Lorenz podcast, that VAR, they have 18 cameras that can pick up all the footage in the stadium. But it seemed that whoever gives the footage to the VAR to then officiate just assumed that Candreva had left. So didn't send them the footage that would have shown that Candreva was still there and only showed them where obviously the camera looks into the box and over what would be Candreva's head. So you didn't actually see it. So the VAR didn't actually have that footage like you said, but the fact was, it was just a really weird one that they just assumed that 35-year-old Candreva wasn't just going to go, actually, don't need to move.
Yeah, I mean, the explanation I can reason with, but... surely the point of VAR is to look at each camera. I mean, it's not really that hard.
It's actually funny because during midweek, Manchester United got a penalty against them, which shouldn't have been a penalty. But a United supporter wrote to me then, is Italian
was it wasn't me, was it?
Always this bad?
It wasn't me, was it?
No, it wasn't you.
I was in the stadium and I was like right behind it and I didn't know, but obviously people on Twitter were like swearing blind it wasn't a penalty and I was like, okay. Then I watched it afterwards and I was like, I don't understand
physically
how I was given a penalty twice over because the referee was standing right next to it.
Yeah, someone wrote to me, are Italian referees always this bad? I was kind of like, you should
yes.
get it out.
Absolutely, yes.
Absolutely, yes.
But I think it's funny that Milik, who, by the way, you know, he came into this season with a lot of flack, but he's made an instant impact, by the way. He's a really, really good player for Juventus.
He's looked really good.
He gave him a shot in the arm when he came on. He got sent off, Cuadrado and Fazio got sent off, and then Allegri got sent off. And then directly after the game, Allegri was asked straight away about the referees, and he said, I would rather not speak. I want to go and eat something, which just clearly states that, like, managers in this league are just sick and tired of the officiating. We're going to talk a little bit more about Spalletti getting sent off and Sarri sticking up a middle finger to someone at the Hellas Verona bench later on. But, I mean, we can talk for days on end about the officiating. What did we think of Juve?
I think that, first and foremost, the defense is not good. It's very disorganized and they're clumsy and I don't know. They're not really good at all. I'm not sure. Cuadrado is a right back and Bremer is still new. So maybe we shouldn't draw conclusions too soon. But I mean, this game, they looked a mess.
There was some weird, like James Horncastle said it as well when he did the post-match analysis. There was some weird decisions going on. Cuadrado was being played in like the opposite flank of where he's normally played. I thought Filip Kostic was really good again.
Yeah.
And he took him off probably 10 minutes before the end for Danilo. Matheus Süle got chucked on with 5 minutes left. I think we've said it numerous times, but the problem is when you play the football Allegri plays, there's always going to be questions. So if results don't come, the questions are going to be twofold. And adding to that, there's no Di Maria, there's no Pogba, there's no Chiesa as well. The pressure is going to mount. I know that he should have 3 points. Having said like all of those things, I'm just remembering last year when... Do you remember that Juve started slow last year, right?
Yeah, they had a worst start since the 60s.
They had a horrible start and then they went 16 unbeaten. And then people started murmuring about a possible Scudetto challenge. So I don't know. I think Allegri is still capable of that.
I don't know with this team. The thing is like obviously there's some good players in there. Kostic, I'm a big advocate for. I really liked him at Frankfurt and obviously... I thought he should have got moved a lot earlier based on the fact that every single striker he played with did really well and then really badly straight after. And no one seemed to ever make the connection that he's a really good creative outlet for if you want to get a striker in the box, which I think is kind of a bit why Milik is great. Because Milik kind of does the things that Vlahovic should be doing, but doesn't particularly do. My main problem with Juve is, one, just play free at the back. Like, you have Cuadrado, who's really good at going forward. You have Kostic, who can literally lock down an entire wing by himself. Just play free at the back. And two, their midfield, yes, through injuries, is, but they just have too many at the moment, especially players that are always the, I would say, a third string players. So, say the dream Juve midfield is probably Locatelli as the like the regista, as the kind of guy who kind of distributes it out a bit. You have the Pogba as your guy who can play it through the lines. And then you throw a McKennie, a Rabiot, or a Moretti into it. And then that kind of makes the solidifies it up a bit. But the problem is they're playing three. They're playing, like, I think they play Paredes, Moretti, and McKennie this game.
Yeah.
And all three of them don't have the ability to break through the lines for the passing. So that kind of limits the strikers. They don't have the ability to really defend by themselves. So they kind of run around uncoordinated. I think that kind of lends to the fact to the defense looking a bit unorganized because they're kind of having to just cover up the spaces that everyone's leaving because no one's really a specialist at anything. They're just kind of that guy who you're like, okay, you're the third guy who does everything else the other two don't do.
Yeah, I agree and disagree with your point. I think Paredes is pretty good at breaking through the lines. He was pretty good at breaking through the lines against Paris and against Salernitana as well. But then I agree with your point in that they just really can struggle to construct attacks apart from like making Vlahovic a target man or making Vlahovic drop deep and then playing off of him, there isn't really too much to really attack with. Allegri basically relies on getting one goal in the first half and then shutting up shop.
Yeah, I think Paredes is pretty good. I think the problem with Paredes is he's very inconsistent. Sometimes he can have the games where he breaks the line. Sometimes he can have the game where he just looks like he's another just guy, another body. And he does do a little bit more defensive work. Like I'm probably saying in terms of the other two who are very clear specialists in terms of Locatelli and like Pogba,
right,
he's a little bit more jack of all trades, master of none, and occasionally can step up, but not like one you'd be like, I can build a midfield around him sort of thing.
I personally think that you can build a midfield around him, but I don't think he's got the other components that he needs next to him, really. Or he has the components next to him, but they're not functioning in the right way at the minute. Just McKennie and Moretti flagged next to him are not correct for me. Maybe we'll see when Pogba comes back in, but I doubt that he's going to play Pogba and Paredes and then just, I don't know, maybe just hope that McKennie is the only one that does defensive duties. But no, Max, what do you think?
For the first time in maybe 2 or 3 years, I think that most of Juve's signings this summer has been what they need and hits. I think that Bremer is a great replacement for De Ligt. I think that Kostic is a great left winger, and the same goes for Di Maria, Paredes, and Milik. Well, Milik, I think, is a great player to have as kind of rotation with Dusan Vlahovic now, at least this fall when there's going to be Champions League almost every week. And you have a similar type of player who obviously has had a good start. My problem is I think that many of them are misused. And I think that it's easy to blame Max Allegri, but I think that it basically comes down to him. You don't get the most out of players like Kostic or Di Maria if you play this kind of defensive football he wants to play. And I don't see why he should play it when Juve are one of the dominant teams in the league. So I think, as Casey touched upon, I think that, for example, play back three would get more out of players like Kostic and Cuadrado, and that would benefit the entire team.
It's interesting stuff. They've kind of hung their hat on Allegri now because the contract's till 2025.
Yeah, they can't fire him now.
No, they can't fire him, otherwise they'll have to pay him out. They, like, obviously went to Sarri. Sarri probably didn't have enough time to implement what he wanted, but then also wanted to win a Scudetto, so he compromised. Then they went to Pirlo. Pirlo didn't really give him the chance to implement what he wanted properly. And then they went back to the tried and tested method of Allegri, and now they're just, I guess, kind of stuck there when managers like Pochettino and Tuchel are available.
Yeah, I think that a manager like Thomas Tuchel would be great for this Juventus team, but as you say, now they've kind of locked themselves in the Max Allegri ring corner, so they got to make the most out of it. But yeah, playing this type of football, I really can't see them coming for a Scudetto this year.
It's a slow start, but they still haven't lost. And I don't know, I've just got this feeling that he can still somehow grind out results. Like these were the same murmurings that we heard last year, and then they went 16 unbeaten.
Yes, it is. But I also think that whilst Juve are kind of the same team in a way, the way they play football and the way players are used, I think that the distance between them and teams like Inter and Napoli have become bigger because I think they've improved so much more than Juve have. So that's kind of why I think the distance between the top three and Juve is bigger than last year. And yeah, that's why I can't see them coming for the title. But as you say, we said the same thing last year, and they, at least they came top four. But yeah, I'm not sure.
They've got a hard run in, a bit of an easier run and then a bit of a harder run. They've got Monza and Bologna. Bologna's been playing quite well. I think Arnautovic has been playing quite well for them. Then Milan, and then Torino, then Empoli. This is all in between like Maccabi Haifa twice and Benfica twice. So I think they've got like a little nice run to try and get some, grind some of the results out and get some people back from injuries. Because I think the injury list has, to give them some like leeway, the injury list has been kind of problematic for them. Because obviously Di Maria would help a lot in terms of pressing to the front and give them a lot of creativity on the right that would kind of probably then take a lot of the weight off Cuadrado to do it all. Obviously like the midfield problems they've said, we've already kind of touched on. So yeah, I think obviously they just kind of need to, as much as I've just criticised Max Allegri for doing this, they just need to grind it out until they can get back to where they need to be.
Mm. What did we make of that remarkable last 10 minutes? That was so fun. That was absurdly fun.
Yeah.
That was absurdly fun.
It's the team. I mean, yeah, it's the team example of couldn't happen to a nicer bloke. It's yeah. Like everything, all the misfortune. I was like, yep, yeah, I'm fine with it. It's Juventus. It's fine.
Yeah. Someone put up a picture of the goal, ghost goal Juve had.
What ghost goal?
When I think it was Muntari. I think it was.
That ghost goal.
And someone put up a picture of it and said, "This is why we don't feel sorry for you."
Yeah. I mean, no, sorry, Juve fans. Please don't DM me telling me that you hate me, and don't DM Max. You can DM Casey if you want. but I mean, the Juve have had some decisions in the past, I think, that have gone their way a little bit.
Not just some, quite many.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we'll leave it there.
Yeah. Concluding, I think that going forward, it will be a very, very important period for Juve now. Dare I say, season defining? I mean, they got to get back on track now.
It does seem as if something's going to give this season for Max.
Yeah.
Let's move on to talk some Inter Milan. Inter 1, Torino 0. What did we make of this, Max?
Inter kind of struggled.
Yeah, they did. They really did.
I think I want to praise Torino more because they've had a great start to the season and they kind of took on Inter very well. But at the end, Inter kind of had that, we discussed it before, that they have some kind of winning DNA, and even if they aren't the best team on the pitch, they still find a way to win. And I think that's what they did here against Torino as well.
They could have lost this game, Inter, first of all.
Yeah, for sure.
They could have lost this game. They look very, very flat. It's particularly obvious that the linchpin of their summer is missing. Like, it's quite obvious that Romelu Lukaku is absent. They clearly feel a little bit jaded without his presence. But by the way, as a side note, Vojvoda is a fantastic player.
Yeah, I think that Nikola Vlasic is a great signing as well.
That, down that left, it was throughout, Vojvoda attacked Dumfries' side, obviously because Dumfries kept pushing up, trying to create space wide, cross it in for Zeko. So they kept exploiting that. Vojvoda was bombing down the wing. Vlasic would join in, and that would lead them to put it on a plate for Sanabria. They had quite a few shots on target. I think this is one of the rare Inter Milan games where I go, oh, actually, Handanovic was really good for them. Normally, yeah, I'm saying how he just flaps at everything. But
he had a save quite early on a shot from Vlasic, which was really good.
Yeah, but it did tend to just, I don't know, Inter looked extremely flat.
Yeah, and I think, as I touched upon earlier, that I think that we see some great progression in Toro's project. I think they came out quite fearless, and they didn't really adapt their football to Inter's. They just had their game plan, which they executed and did it very well.
They pressed extremely well.
Yeah.
As well, they pressed like really, really well. Skriniar, De Vrij, Di Marco, and then Brozovic would sort of drop deep to build up, but because like Sek or maybe a Linetti was pushing up to basically press Brozovic on the ball, what was happening was Barella was then dropping deep as well. So then you've lost an extra man in midfield pushing up with the attack, which kind of just let Torino press both of them in defense when they drop back in, limiting them centrally. I thought that strangely Darmian looked the more attacking fullback in this one. Normally the onus is all on Dumfries.
Yeah, I think that Darmian has been great, to be honest, throughout this start of the season. I think we praised him last week as well. He doesn't really do much going forward, but what he does, he kind of nails it. If it makes sense. But yeah, I was surprised as well, because I got the same feeling as you did, that Dumfries was the more defensive one of them.
Strangely enough, for this, I think because Vojvoda was so threatening down the wing. But yeah, what did you think of Inter, Casey, looking a little bit flat?
I think from what I've seen the highlights, I've kind of had a little bit of a read through of like the breakdown of the match, and it seems to be there's just a compound of a lot of the issues that they had at the start of the season. Like, I think what Max said about Lukaku, I think was is pretty relevant. I think Edin Dzeko is finally starting to show his age a bit, in terms of, I think he's just not really, like, he had that thing of he always knew how to position himself perfectly, despite the fact that he didn't really have the pace or the agility to do it. However, he seems to now not have even the smallest amount of pace to do that, which I think is obviously, it doesn't really help into that much, because obviously, like what you were saying, like when they kind of drop deep to try and build up, they always had that get out of jail free option of just ping it up to Dzeko and he can hold it up. And they don't seem to have that now, so they kind of get pinned back in their own half by the defense. I still to this day don't understand. I mean, what like the point of signing Robin Gosens was? Because I feel like obviously they kind of usually balance it out. Because obviously Damian's been playing really well, and that kind of explains why he's not been playing. And he kind of balances out a lot with Dumfries basically just playing the Branislav Ivanovic role of just being a striker in a right back's body. I just feel like he's wasted. I feel like sometimes in these sorts of games where they're definitely being pinned back with Dumfries, because they know that Dumfries will have to not attack if you just press him a lot. You could bring on someone like Robin Gosens and just kind of add a load of creativity on the other side, which then probably helps Dumfries a bit, because they now have to now move a bit over, and then it gives him space. But yeah, I don't think that sign has particularly worked out, and I just kind of it feel bad, because obviously like at Atalanta he was really, really good, and he obviously,
he was amazing. Actually,
when he played for Germany as well, he broke into the German team, he looked incredible down the left. He's now probably lost his place to Raum, but this is a Serie A podcast, I'm not going into the Bundesliga.
But yeah, sure?
I mean, I can do, but like in terms
no,
of,
don't.
I won't do. But in terms of the, Yeah, I think he just kind of was one of those moves that made a lot of sense, but then instantly didn't because of how they used him.
I do wonder what on earth has happened to Robin Gosens. I mean, he looked so pristine in that Moncler jumper that they put on him. Have you seen that one, Max?
Yeah.
Have you seen this, Casey? The Moncler, you've not seen the Moncler jumper that they give to Inter signings when they sign contracts?
I have not seen this Moncler jumper. I have seen the Moncler jumper, but probably didn't realize it was a thing. I have definitely not seen Gosens in one.
They've got a partnership with Moncler, and all of their signings wear it. It's pretty terrific, actually. No, why? Why? Look it up now.
I'll look it up. You continue talking about whatever it is, but I will get back to it.
Anyway,
the entire Inter team in Moncler jumpers. That's
you give your reaction to the Moncler jumper, and Max is going to tell me about what he thinks of Robin Gosens' career into Milan.
Yeah, it feels like he's never really come into the style of play and everything around it. He came, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was injured when he came. And he's never really taken a place. It feels like Inzaghi prefers either Darmian or Di Marco. I'm not sure why, because I think that Gosens in general is a better player than both. At least at Atalanta, he could hold down a wing on his own and kind of produce assists or even goals. So I don't really know why, but it feels like he's never really gotten a chance and come into the rhythm at Inter, really.
Yeah. Interesting one to keep an eye on there, because when he signed, I was so excited. I was excited for Inter fans. I think you can put that down as an unsuccessful signing now, really.
Yeah, there were rumors on deadline that he was going away to Leverkusen.
Yeah. But I mean, despite all the things we've said, Inter did grind out a 1-0 win.
Yeah.
So they keep trugging along now, basically 2 points from the top.
That's just going to be the Serie A this season, isn't it? It's just going to be, everyone's just going to keep chugging along. It's like, just keep grinding out the wins and hope.
It's a mid-off, is what it is. It's a mid-off.
One thing I don't know really why, but Inzaghi seems to prefer Di Marco in a back three over Bastoni.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point I was going to make, actually. Lisandro Bastoni was probably last year one of the most, last 2 years, I think, since Conte came in, one of the most exciting like centre backs as well, with the Bastoni overlap, if you will.
Honestly, it was kind of close between him and Bremer for best centre back.
Centre back last year, yeah. But that might have affected him too, but they lose a lot of creation just by him not being in there as a third centre back.
And also, I think that they lose a lot of defensive stability when they play Di Marco instead of him there, because he's better than Di Marco defensively, but he still has the offensive creativity. So they can play both Di Marco and Bastoni, but they don't.
Yeah. I think also we're now seeing that there were a lot of players that thrived and probably reached their highest ceiling and their peak under Antonio Conte. And now we're sort of seeing them either trudge off or just kind of meander a little bit. I know Lautaro Martinez has regained a bunch of form, but there's a bunch of players there that have not been anywhere near as the level that they were at under Conte consistently for those two, three seasons.
Yeah, and I also think that Inter lose a lot this year due to Hakan Çalhanoğlu not being in form, because they lose a lot of offensive creativity there. He scored 7 goals and made 13 assists last season, and now he has 1 goal and 1 assist in 6 games. That, along with Lukaku being out, I think has hurt Inter offensively a lot.
You just wait for those set pieces, Max. He's going to stat pad. You worry.
Yeah, he will. But I was surprised last year because he continued his great form he had at Milan, not only through set pieces, but also through open play. And when he's not at his best this year, I think Inter as a team has lost a lot.
Agreed there. I mean, they did win, so they go chugging along. Casey, did you have a look at the Moncler jumper?
I did. I sent you over the image that I saw. They look like a late 90s boy band, or at least the cast of Entourage. It's like a black and white photo of them all just like on a...
Anyway, okay. AC Milan, let's move on to the crosstown rivals, beat Sampdoria in a 2-1. This was also, it wasn't as chaotic as Juventus Salernitana, but it was fun still as well. Red card for, I believe, AC Milan?
Yeah, Rafael.
Rafael, yeah, double yellow. I was just reading all the yellow cards because Marco Giampaolo got sent off as well right at the end. Milan were going along fine. Rafael was being Rafael on the left-hand side. Pobega had a decent game as well. They score a good goal in Marseilles, and then I think the red card just changes everything for them, really.
Yeah, it did. Not only did they lose a player, they lost their most creative player. So they were hurt both offensively and numerically. And that kind of gave Sampdoria some air to breathe and kind of reorganize themselves and get an advantage. So that red card really changed the game. But the same as Inter, Milan found a way to win, which...
Pretty doggedly. Yeah. When it went to 1-1, when Juricic scored on the 57th minute, it genuinely looked as if, like, Sampdoria were going to go for the win.
Yeah.
Like, he made offensive changes as well. He bought... I think he bought Gabbiadini on straight away on the 59th minute for Berezinski. Yeah, and Giampaolo was like, we can win here. And then obviously they get a penalty. I think it's a penalty, to be honest, the Giroud's penalty.
Yeah,
get a penalty.
The funny thing is that no one reacted to it. Not even you.
No. This was a good VAR call for once, but I thought this was a good VAR call, a penalty. Milan score from there. And then from then onwards, it was like 22 minutes of dogged backs to the wall defending. I've never seen Oliver Giroud run as much as I did in this game. That man is exhausted. Yeah. Oliver Giroud, if you're listening, go have yourself a Gatorade, my friend. I don't know how they did it, but Milan basically, I think he chucked Tomori on as well at the end. They were basically playing a back five. They were playing basically a 5-3-1, defending really well. But like whenever they cleared the ball, Giroud would get it, chest it down, either buy a foul or like just try and ricochet off the other player and kick it out. Because Pioli had made his 3 subs, you can have 5 subs in Italy, but you can only make it in 3 slots, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
That makes sense, right? So he had used all of his subs. So I think this was one of the best Giroud performances in a Milan shirt for me, just as well as the goal.
Yeah, one thing I thought was kind of interesting was it was towards the end, I think maybe 15 or 10 minutes left of the game or so. Pioli actually subbed Tommaso Pobega, defensive player for Aster Vranckx, one of the new signings.
Yeah.
And I thought, even though Aster Vranckx is more of an offensive player than Tommaso Pobega, he had an interesting effect because he has a much better ball retention than Pobega. So he kind of could waste some time just by holding the ball or kind of pausing the game, which I thought was very interesting and brave by Pioli. He kind of went for a player who doesn't bring the same defensive stability but can kill time a bit better. And that was something I thought was really fascinating about this game.
Casey?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that sort of sentiment. I quite liked Charles de Catalara. I think he's getting, I think that's how you pronounce it. I did just look it up just to make sure.
CDK.
I did quite like his performance. I thought he got more involved. Unluckily, got the goal ruled out that he thought he'd scored. But I think Pioli kind of said after the game, he was like, I like him. I like what he brings, goals or no goals. So I think he's getting there. He's just a very weird player to fit in, and I think he's just kind of finding his feet around everyone. But yeah, I quite like his. I always like his performances. I think he's a very good player, and I think he works. He tries to work with everyone around him very well.
Yeah, I think they certainly needed that link in CAM after sort of an iffy season from Benacer last year, but he looks so young. He looks so young.
He does. And
I can't get over how young he
looks. It's like if you stretched out a 14-year-old on a rack. Like, he's just very tall, but Jesus. He has the face of a 14-year-old.
Oh, you could have just agreed and said he looks young. Jesus, Casey.
But I had to say he's very tall. Like, that's the thing. Like, he's incredibly tall.
That's kind of an interesting thing about him, because looking generally, those players in his role as a number 10 are often quite small or smaller. But he kind of has the physique, the height, and the technique, which is a very interesting combo for Milan there, because not only can he kind of work between the lines and create for others, but he can also kind of come as a second wave on crosses in the box, which he kind of becomes a weapon Milan didn't have last season from that position. So yeah, I really like what he brings to the team.
Everton effect, just put a very tall guy at number 10 and just have him running really late.
Hey, if it works, don't be hating on Fellaini now.
I'm not hating on Fellaini, I love Fellaini.
Yeah, we love a good butter chester of the ball.
But yeah, he offers a lot. I think obviously like his height, it's one of those weird ones where his height doesn't, it can be used as a benefit, but then it also kind of, when you're being surrounded by a lot of players who are very small, very nippy, very agile, it kind of does make him look worse when he can't do those things, when those are kind of the things that everyone accepts are very, very good and very useful in those positions. But I think it's just kind of finding his role in the team. Obviously, like, it's kind of one of those ones where it's like, it kind of got cut short by Leao's red, or two yellows to a red. So eventually he'll get the goals and eventually he'll find his place. But it's just fine. He's doing the right things off without getting the output, I think.
Yeah. Milan don't win this game like 2 years ago, though, by the way. Two seasons or a seasons ago, like that, the way they dug in and won at the end in particular was like that's what they've established this year. I don't think we can forget if it's going to be a mid off or a grinding out like we've said. I think Milan are the favorites still.
Darnish,
see,
you can't see it, but I'm raising my hand here because I want to say something.
Would you say it?
Yeah, can I say my favorite thing about this game?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm joking. Go ahead.
So as we mentioned earlier, Marco Giampaolo, the Sampdoria manager, he got a red card. And after the game, he was asked about it. And he says, yes, I deserved my red card. I called the referee a moron. he had no shame about it.
Marco Giampaolo has like the weirdest look. I don't know. He just looks like he works too hard. He's in an office.
He looks exhausted.
He looks tired. He looks disheveled. He never looks cool.
I'm currently watching, I don't know what the actor's name is, but I'm currently watching Glow. And there's a producer in that show.
Tom Cruise?
No, it's not Tom Cruise, but he looks exactly like him, but like the Italian version, if it's put that way.
Who stars in Glow?
It is about women's wrestling. So it's Alison Brie, I think. But let me just see if I can find the cast and I'll send you a picture. It's so great that if you type in the word Glow, you don't actually get the TV series actually offered to you. Again, leave me alone for a second. I will get back. I'll be right back.
Casey's going to look something up and he'll be right back. Just some other fixtures that we'll quickly talk about. Napoli beat Spezia 1-0. And another manager was sent off. Spalletti was sent off. As soon as Raspadori scored in the dying embers of the game, he turned to the Spezia bench and yelled. Like, literally, go back and watch the clip. He literally clambers over the fourth official and yells at him. The benches were heated this week, man. We were just talking off air about Maurizio Sarri stuck up a finger as well at Hellas Verona, probably because they sold Simeone and they sold Caprari. But yeah, managers were heated and benches were heated, but it was a really important win for Napoli just after the Liverpool win. It's a much changed team as well. There wasn't any Osimhen, so anything. Quite a few players missing, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing with Napoli, I think they've done kind of the right thing this summer when kind of getting a lot of players just to kind of be like, okay, if this guy's tired or this guy needs to come off or this guy's injured, there's someone who can slot in and can do the job or get the goals or do whatever. And that's kind of what Raspadori's done in this game. I think the thing is like, this was kind of the big test for Napoli, I think, in terms of what, in the long term, would they have a chance at the title? Was like, if your major player, like, say, two major players are out, can you still get a win? Can you still get the goals and all that sort of stuff? And I think they showed, I mean, they left it very late, but they kind of showed that they can do that at least.
Yeah.
I thought you guys pretty much, as I said, about both Inter and Milan. Napoli are finding ways to win.
Finding ways to grind out that win.
Yeah, it's kind of repetitive, but it's true. Now they won it in the 89th minute, and that with a heavily rotated team. I think it's a great sign of strength for Napoli, because I don't think they would have been able to do this last season. At least not rotate so many players and get this result. But now they did. And I think that Spalletti's project is moving forward as well. And
yeah, Spalletti's done a great job.
Yeah.
Just a quick word on Spalletti. Did you please tell me you heard the sound he made when Elmas gave the ball away?
I have a vague memory. I did.
Have you not heard of this? I'm going to play you the sound. This was Spalletti when Elmas gave the ball away.
I love Spalletti, man.
That screeching was Luciano Spalletti. I think that basically covers everything in terms of the Napoli game. Casey, you wanted to talk very quickly about the interesting things going on at Lazio with Maurizio Sarri?
Yeah, obviously, like I have a second option, but I was going to kind of talk about him at the end of the show a bit, because obviously his middle finger up at the ref was a beautiful thing, because it's just perfectly Sarri, because he's just a very angry Italian man, and he's always been a very angry Italian man. And I think he fits into that lovely archetype of just, I will do whatever I want on a football field and everyone will just kind of go its way. And it goes into his football as well, which is what we're going to talk about now. Like Lazio are getting it. That's probably the best way of summarizing it. I think that the way you watched them last season, the kind of, there was the little foundations there of what you could see of like Sarri ball or Sarismo, like, You could see it a bit, but you were like, oh, this is where it breaks down. This is where they don't know what to do. This is what all this sort of thing. But yeah, you see like it in bursts now, and you can see like the fully formed moves and like that sort of very, it's like organized disorganization. Like they know what to do in certain situations by themselves. He doesn't drill. Like I think I read something once, he doesn't really drill. He like specific moves. He's not like, we're just going to do this move 100 times and then we're going to try and pull off in a match. He's like, right, you're going to get the ball here. Just do something that makes sense. And that's kind of the way, the mentality. And you can see that with Lazio. I mean, obviously, like Ciro Immobile, you're always going to bet on him to score. You'll never see the goal. You'll never know know how he did it. You just look at the score sheet and go, oh yeah, Ciro Immobile scored. It's just kind of thing. Yeah, I think he usurped Batistuta's record in the Serie A.
Yeah.
He got 185 to Batistuta's 184. I'm very glad that Totti has 65 goals on him because, not going to lie, it's just the one, he's just like, he gets loads of goals, but like, it's that's his game. Like, it's one of those things, like, it's one of those debates where everyone will go, oh, Ciro Immobile in the top strikers debate. And I'm like, just please don't do that to me. Like, I like him in the role he has. Just please don't make me have to like argue down. To like
sit, I think we might have to make you argue.
I'm not. If you start making me argue about Serie A legends against Ciro Immobile, it is an argument.
I mean, no, it's an unfair comparison, obviously, because his career is not concluded. I do think he's underrated.
But... I think Lies put it on. It's like the everybody eats era. It's like it's the Ciro Immobile. He's kind of like the poster boy of that. But he does it well. Like, I can't really argue with that. And it kind of works.
I think he's great for Lazio. He fulfills his role really well.
Yeah.
He's extremely mobile, gets a ton of goals every year. But yeah, no, it's. I think things are coming together nicely for Lazio and Sarri.
Yeah, and I quite like Felipe Anderson. Felipe Anderson's, like, over the last few years, I think his career kind of rejuvenation has been really good. Because he was obviously really good that season with West Ham. And then he kind of just disappeared off the face of the earth. While still being at West Ham, and then went back to Lazio, and he's kind of just like rebuilt himself up to be the player he was at Lazio before. And I mean, I think there was a ridiculous stat that he had done the most defensive pressures when he was at Lazio before, and now he kind of just has that energy still. So it's kind of, it's very good to watch.
Yeah, he's also tweaking certain things now. Patrick in as the centre back pairing, he started Marusic and Lazzari together for like the first time in Yonks. So I think he's slowly getting to the things that he wants with this team. Now, to conclude, to finish things off, we're going to come back with the segment, the much anticipated segment that we haven't done for a while. Arsehole and Goat of the Week. Yay! Casey doesn't seem very enthusiastic, but anyway.
I'm very enthusiastic. I just do not show it through the medium of...
Okay, so who are we starting off with then? Who's got who's going to be everyone's arsehole of the week, Max?
Pains me to say, but we have to go with the VAR referees at Juve.
Yeah. I can't see any other way where we. I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah, I can't really argue either way. I mean, I would love to just find something else to say and just be like, oh, yeah, but because it's Juventus, but the kind of thing is just, it's the VAR thing. Like, there's literally nothing else I can say on that, to be honest.
I was going to say something maybe to do with the Francesco Totti situation, but
screw it.
Yeah. God of the week, then.
I will leave this to you.
You're putting me on the spot, just like that?
You just put me on the spot, and I delivered.
Okay. I am going to give it to Simon Kaye.
Because?
I think coming back from, like, all of that, all of the injuries last year, and I think he was out for, like, 16 or 17, 18 games or something, and then he was thrust into the lineup, I think a couple of weeks ago in a difficult game. But he just looks seamless there now. Tomori didn't start. Kaya started with Kalulu, and they just defended the goal as if their lives depended on it for like the remaining 20 minutes of that game with 10 men. It also gives Milan a different option now, because maybe Pioli would consider playing back five, although he never does.
Yeah. But it was kind of a special game for him as well, because it was at the Marassi where he injured himself last season.
Yeah.
He was back.
Redemption. He also looks like Wagner Lofbrück a lot with that ponytail.
Yeah, he brings the Viking to Nordic Viking.
I think my only shout would be not just I think he does very well, better from Udinese. I just think he's a great player.
That is a shout and a half.
I think he obviously came on, scored two goals. I just think he's just one of those players where you're like, this guy definitely should not be at Udinese, and he'll definitely not be there next season. Like, I thought he was going to go this season, but he's obviously kept him, and he's still just banging in the goals. I think he's just a great player, and I just thought I'd give him some love on my appearance on the podcast.
if Napoli sell Osimhen next summer, that's a logical replacement.
For sure. For sure. That concludes things for us. Casey Evans, thank you so, so much for appearing on the podcast. If you have anything to plug, go ahead. Now's the time.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Casey_Evans_. I'm assuming it might be linked, because that is always a mouthful to say and also to find. And I also have my own newsletter on Substack, Played on Paper. Currently I'm doing a weekly World Cup series, looking back at the history of World Cups. Unfortunately, Italy aren't in it because they're not in the World Cup. And also I do a weekly roundup every Monday, which is usually, well, it wasn't this week, but Premier League, but you look at the Serie A, it's usually a game from Serie A, and there's usually a game from around Europe, and maybe just some random one that I found. I think today, this week, the random one was the Superclásico in Argentina. But yeah, if you want to subscribe to that, it's free, and it's where I talk a lot about football.
Lovely jubbly. Well, thank you so much, listener, for joining us. This was Area De Rigore, episode 5 for breakingthelines.com. Go ahead and check out all the articles on there, and follow the Twitter account, Area_De Rigore. I've been Danish Iqbal, and he's been Maxi Angelo.
I have been, yes.
Oh, you still are?
I am.
And we will see you again, hopefully, next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.